This is Spartancast.
Hello, everyone. You're listening to AU Campus Voice on Spartancast, Aurora University's student radio station. I'm Steve Gilla, and with me today is my co-host, Haley Cummings.
Thanks, Steve. Campus Voice is a show where we interview students, faculty, and staff of the AU community.
Today on the show, we'll be speaking with Professor Rausch and Pietro Alfano.
Professor Rausch is the director of the upcoming fall play, Trojan Women, and Pietro is a cast member of the same play.
How's it going?
Good morning, yeah.
Well, we're going to get started with a couple questions. Generally speaking, what is Trojan Women about?
Well, Trojan Women is about the women and the children who are left after the Trojan horse. A lot of people know the idea, at least, of the Trojan horse coming in into Troy. The Greeks come in and conquer Troy. Well, people don't often think, what next? We have this glorious thing, as far as the Greeks are concerned, to get Helen back. And it's the women and the children left behind.
Okay.
And what led to the Trojan Women being the play that was chosen for this semester?
It's a great question. Several things, actually. Professor Cram and I, who is my colleague in the theater department and the head of art and theater, we try to look 5 years out in our planning to make sure that we are covering all different genres of theater. So we've got contemporary drama, we do some classical comedy, we try to make sure there's a Greek play, which we haven't done here in years and years, actually. And that's the beginning of Western theater. So these great plays that still resonate, I mean, so we're always looking educationally to tie things in and have people get a broad base of the plays that are classics and contemporary. We're also looking for plays that speak to and engage our audience now. We believe in storytelling, but stories that are engaging, not just because it's a classic or it's history. Why? And this play, and one of the main reasons is I had a young woman last year, a student at AU, come up to me and she said, the one thing I want to do before I graduate is be in an AU theater department production. It's like, okay, we can make this happen. You know, let's figure out. And something great about Greek plays is that they really, you can have a larger cast with that because there is a chorus often. So finding a way to really have all the students who are interested in being involved have an opportunity. And this really provided a great one while being, we knew we wanted to do a classic play this year. And also for this season, we do two major shows a year. And the students have a show, a winter show in February production. But our two major shows, we went to classic Greek tragedy in the fall. Although it's a contemporary adaptation, it's very Hunger Games, very edgy, and the story itself is very similar. And then in the spring, we're doing the Mikado, which is a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta, which is very light and really fluffy and a musical. So we really said, okay, let's go to both extremes and tell those different stories and give the community a wide variety of interesting things to see.
It definitely is interesting, I have to say. I'm really excited for this one.
Good!
So, Pietro, what is your role in the play, and what is your character's personality, I guess?
Well, my role in the show, I'm Menelaus. I'm the king of the Greeks, basically. I'm the leader of the army. And it's pretty much, my men are the ones who destroyed Troy, and all of it was just to get my wife back, Helen. So, in terms of my personality, he's a bad guy. he's very hot-headed, kind of maybe bipolar, a little bit. Oh. He's more crazy, which is nice getting to play somebody like that, because the last few shows and, you know, the last few things I've done in class, I haven't really got to, you know, experience playing somebody who's nuts.
Has a darker side.
Very dark side.
He's used to getting what he wants. He's used to getting it fast.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. And so that's how I could, that's how the best way I can describe personality. But yeah, I'm Menelaus. I'm the king, and everyone should listen to me. That's how I look at it. And the minute I walk into rehearsal, that's how I feel too.
Did you have to do anything to prepare for the role of Menelaus, or was it just kind of, did you dig deep and get it automatically?
I wouldn't say that so much, but there's actually a couple things. Like I said, Menelaus, he's, you know, he feels like he is, he's the king, so everybody should listen, everybody should do what he wants. And there's actually a couple points in the show, I'm not going to spoil too much because I don't want to say anything, but there's a couple actions he has to take that, in terms of my personality, I could never actually, like, physically do that to somebody. So there was, you know, some realizing, okay, you know, this isn't who you are. You're playing a character, so you have to be able to dig down and find how this person would do it, you know, and realize this is for the show. So in terms of digging deep, yes, there was a little digging deep I had to do. And then there was also some things that came kind of natural for the character. There's a little, like, how do we describe it? He's got a light switch temper. So that back and forth, that's stuff I play with every day in normal life. So finding that on stage was pretty easy for me.
Okay.
Well, and he's also, one day we found part of his costume being a long leather duster that he wears with leather gloves. And the moment he put that on, all of a sudden there was the puffed up chest and I am the king. And so it was fun to see how a costume helped him jump. And there's been a lot of work you've done. He and the women of the play off stage have a lot of trust among each other, so they're able to go to these extreme darker places because they've become friends and worked hard professionally together.
Okay.
Who is the main star of the play, or is it a compilation of many stars?
Star, that's such a great American word, it feels. So, do you know, so let's see, the story, it's great, the title gives you information, The Women of Troy. The leader of the Women of Troy is the queen that's been left behind. So all the men are gone. So there's a queen, and it's a family drama. There's a queen, there's a daughter-in-law, there's a daughter, there's Helen, Helen, the most beautiful woman in the world, who's the kind of stepdaughter-in-law, who's married to Menelaus from somewhere else. So Hecuba is the queen. So she is the head of the women of Troy. So it's essentially her story, her and the chorus, actually, who really function with her as this body of women being sent off to slavery. So we follow Hecuba and the chorus through it all. That being said, there's not a star in it. It really is
a
collaboration.
Who plays the role of Hecuba?
Hecuba Gillian Jolly, who is a senior here. It's great. She's a senior who graduates this spring, and she is the one playing Hecuba. So she's doing the most heavy lifting from beginning to end.
Okay.
But it really is. The chorus never leave the stage. She never leaves the stage. People are on for the show.
Oh, wow, that's really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, they're going to be there before the audience comes in, and they're there through the play.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I love it. Haley's eyes just got really big.
Yeah,
so
I'm really definitely even more excited now. I really am. Okay, so the next question, I'm kind of going to go back to... since we talked about Pietro and your role in the play, are there any modifications that the actors had to go through, anything like that? Because I know I've seen a lot of people who have had to dye their hair different colors for their characters. Is there anything that you have to do for your role?
Yes. I do have to cut my hair, which isn't bad. I don't mind cutting my hair. There was talks in the beginning of the rehearsal process of actually shaving my head down at the skin, but through different, you know, nightmares and things like that. You know, I spoke with Professor Rochefort. I said, you know, I mean, I don't mind cutting my hair, but shaving it to the scalp, she said, you know, I don't want to make you lose sleep over this. So yes, I am cutting my hair, but that's not anything that's really detrimental to me, because I had to do it for shows last year. So pretty much that's it for me. But I know that the soldiers, Cody Kovganka, Kyle and Anwar, they all have to dye their hair, but it's not permanent dye. You know, they spray their hair for the show, and Cody actually he has a mohawk, so he's kept the mohawk throughout the whole thing. And so in terms of the guys, our hair changes a little bit, and the girls just get theirs done up and stuff, and you know, they get all the fake blood and stuff put on their faces, so it's definitely something to come look at.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Cassandra, our young woman who plays Cassandra, we've been inspired by the cover and the music from Evanescence's album. Their big album. I don't know the name, but it's in my car. And the woman on front with the long, Amy Lee with the long black hair. And so our Cassandra went from a really lovely light brown hair to black. She dyed it this week, and she had to dye it twice to get it black enough. So we've got a little dyeing going on, too.
Oh, okay.
Looks good, Anna.
Professor Rush, how do you design costumes for gods and goddesses?
What a fun question. Well, I am not the designer, so the costume designer. As the director, I get to have the great opportunity to come in and read a script and have a vision for it and try to get everybody on board. So for me, what really resonated with this play is that it is so contemporary. We are still dealing with how people treat each other and oppress them in armed conflicts, and how do people, especially the weak, being the women and the children and the elderly, often get up and move forward if they're able to? How do you stand up when you've lost all? And so within this, and have gotten to work with Patricia Biley, who is our costumer, and she's an AU alum, which is very exciting. So she's been with us in the theater department and has now graduated, come back, and is costuming. But one of the great conversations, when I read this play, the way it's written is so contemporary and exciting that I immediately went, oh, it's a guy on a beach. It's Fabio, in a way, on a beach. This idea of, you know, someone in linen pants and, you know, walking around. And kind of almost when you think of Percy Jackson and how things have been really contemporized in the films, thinking of what would gods be to us now. Helen, in some ways, is inspired by Marilyn Monroe. We've really done this. We've really gone from a core of old, new mashup. What can we have that's kind of old Greek stone and metal, post-apocalyptic Mad Maxi? And even with then the gods, we are using a mask, a half mask, which is traditional. The Greeks use masks a lot, and we talk a lot in the play about faces and when do we hide from things. And if any of you know Trey Gonzalez, who's playing Poseidon, who is a lovely, lovely, talented young man, who is also very godlike. He's a big football player. And so it's been really fun because we thought, okay, what would we see now today as someone who would be, and also a romantic ideal. So we've gone with romantic ideals and contemporary. So man on beach in linen pants and woman in beautiful white flowy voluptuousness. So that's how we've gone this time around. It's hard. It was really hard casting gods and demigods because everybody has an expectation.
Yeah, I find that a lot whenever there's something that has started out as like a book and it's coming into like a visual adaptation, it's so hard because everyone has their own individual idea of what this person looks like, how this person portrays what they've been reading. So that's always interesting to see come to life when actors portray that.
Yes, and this is where theater it is exciting and different than film. In film, you really can scour the world for someone who looks like you think they look. So we're here in the fall of 2013. Here's the handful, and it was a huge handful, which was exciting, of students auditioning for this play. But how do all those puzzle pieces fit together? And I mean, I had no idea coming in. How is all of this going to work? And who complements each other? And one of the nice things is, Pietro can really, as Menelaus, who's Helen's husband, Helen's a half-goddess, pulls off kind of a big, powerful, older guy. And our Helen is this just beautiful, young freshman. And so you can really see an age difference. You know, and I had no idea coming in that we'd get to play with that. But yes, so much of it, too, is not only what might I have seen, and everyone has their own visions, but then who walks through the door? You know, and how do you tell the story the best? Because we have some really just talented, committed, exciting students that could have played many roles. So what's the best telling at this time with these people? So, yes, and then how will the audience respond? You hope you tell it in such a way that people, because I know one of the students has a professor who had said that, you know, they love the Paris-Helen love story. So Paris is one of the Trojans, and he went and got Helen, and that's a really romantic kind of Romeo and Juliet for him. And that's not the tact of this play. This was a, you know, an adulterous stealing, going, leaving kind of thing. So yeah, people have a lot of thoughts about Greek myths that we don't even realize. We studied them in fifth grade and in eighth grade and in college. So yeah, It'll be interesting to see who's upset or concerned or disagrees with the casting, or if you can go with the show and go, oh, sure, I can see that version of Helen and Poseidon. And
as the more this thing goes on, I just get more and more excited to actually watch it. But you mentioned that it's a little bit different in terms of its presentation. You mentioned the chorus line being a little bit different. Could you describe that, how it's going to be different?
Sure. One of the things, personally, I love language plays. I think language is so important. So things like Shakespeare or the Greeks, things that often scare us, we think, oh, that's a lot of words. I don't know what's going on. And the more that I have the opportunity to work with students and watch them explore things and their eyes go, oh, that makes complete sense. That's such an amazing way to express really this intense feeling. So with the Greeks can often be scary to people because you think, oh, it's going to be all old school. It's going to be women singing and dancing and chanting, and I can't connect with that. And the way the Greeks used chorus often in Greek time were to be in between big conversations. So you need a little break. Okay, we're going to dance, we're going to sing. Well, one of the things important to Professor Cran and I is to tell stories that are engaging. And this story, which is so timely, so written 2,500 years ago, still really timely, this adaptation was written in such a way that it took out really what felt like extraneous or unhelpful allusions to Greek places and lots of Greek history that the Greek people would know. We still keep a core of that. But the chorus in particular is supposed to being one body that would stand and chant or sing, which is not really what we're used to. I mean, I think a lot of people like glee, and we get glee from the Greeks. That's where the chorus came from. But this is written where there are individual voices in the chorus. So we have six women who have worked individually to create six individual Trojan women, all with a backstory. And then also at times they play jackal-like women as a whole, as kind of a riot, what we get together when we get going as a group of people, have really taken kind of the zombie apocalyptic take on things. How do you, if you are collateral damage and you are women shoved into a dump crate, I mean, when you look at the set, it's a big dumpster. They've been shoved in a warehouse dumpster and they're in holding. And how do you deal in these tense situations? So the chorus is such an integral part, and they tell the story, but in such a way that it's not dancing and singing, as some people might think. They've got a whole stomp pounding section where they're working. It's almost like women in a prison going, let me out, let me out, let me out, that kind of thing, and having these conversations, working things out together. So really tried to make it with what people do. They try to figure out, what do you do next? Is that helpful?
Yes.
Is that confusing? Okay. So the chorus is awesome. I had an alumni come see the show the other night, and he just went, the soldiers and the chorus tell this story. So yeah, I'm excited because the students have really bought in and said, oh, we're the narrative. We're the ones who give you the feel for what's going on. So yeah, it's different. It's a more contemporary take on traditional Greek. I'm not so interested in doing traditional just for traditional. I hope that people come who see the show are engaged and go away going, yeah, I want you to walk away like you walk away from the Hunger Games. I hope that people are that excited by what they've seen, even if it is a hard story, and say, okay, what does that mean to me? Do I care?
Mm-hmm. Okay, you took that question out of my mouth, I think, but Trey is going to be Poseidon, you said.
Yes.
What is his costume look like?
Trey has on kind of a dark blue linen pant and a light blue tank top and his fabulous tattoos. This is great because everyone in the show has tattoos and they can all wear them in this world, have their own tattoos, no covering up. So it is Trey barefoot in pajama beach attire in the center of the stage with this fabulous half mask that Professor Curran has created. With his dreads all out, if you've seen Dread, Trey, he's got these great dreads. So it is him in the middle of this dumpster, but surrounded by this purple magical light. So the god comes into the space, and all of a sudden it just shifts. That's what he looks like.
So you took the traditional symbols out, and like the trident. There's no trident.
There is no trident. No, and we actually, we went back and forth, because we thought, you know, what about a trident? What do we know about Poseidon? I have a 6 and an 8-year-old who are in love with Poseidon. So I hear all the time, what does Poseidon look like and what does he do? And so we've gone back and forth, but the more we worked on it, and Trey himself really has just done such powerful work in the play, watching him stand in the middle of this space is so strong and compelling. There's a fisherman's net on the set, and we know that he's there on the, you know, on a sand, near a beach. So we have taken out things that are more traditional, other than we mocked the face mask off of an old Poseidon statue from 2,500 years ago. So yes, and we'll see what people think, because yeah, it wasn't.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with that, but
a trident. But yeah, so we've gone more contemporary as opposed to him standing with the trident. We played with that a little bit, but it didn't seem necessary.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Real briefly, just to get a word from both of you, are there any characters that really stick out to you from the play, something that you relate to more than the other ones, anything whose story just particularly sticks out to you?
Oh boy. One character that sticks out, that actually sticks out to me a lot, is Trey's other character, not Poseidon, Talthybius, because it's nice to see, this is not speaking from my character's eyes, but seeing that during this time of war, when all these men were basically just, I mean, treating these women like garbage, like they're nothing, pretty much doing whatever they want, you know, it's nice to see that there was still that one person that maybe wasn't as bad as everybody thinks they are. You know, like the soldiers come in and the soldiers are relentless, they're ruthless, they make fun, they, you know, they pick on these girls.
Because they're tired and they've spent 10 years on foreign shores.
Well, yeah, that's why. But, and then Talthybius is almost, he's not as forceful with them in a way, you know, like my character comes in, he could care less if he hurts these girls. They're nothing to him. The soldiers, like I said, they're exasperated, they're tired, they just want this war to be over. So honestly, they're trying to get rid of these girls. They don't care about them either. You know, and that's not saying that Talthybius is in love with all of them, but he's more understanding to the situation. He's like, you know, I'm fed up, I want to go home, so let's take care of this the best we can. You know, don't put up a fight, just come with me. So he tries to be reasonable. He tries to reason with him a little bit. So I like Talthybius' character because it's different from the rest of the men in the show. You know, he's the same, but he has a little bit of a different edge to him.
Okay.
So that's one character that aside from myself, that I enjoy.
Okay, and Professor Rausch, is there one that sticks out to you?
Sure. Hecuba, in particular, and all the women go through this in some way, but I find Hecuba so compelling because she's a woman who's lived her life by a certain set of rules that have worked. And this whole process is her going, okay, I lived a life where it was about men going out and getting honor and glory, which means war, and we really glorified that. And the women stayed home and took care of the house and were good, perfect wives. And how did we get here? How did we go from a perfect society? And so her whole world is shattered, and watching, I just think everyone I know, as life goes on, in college is a time where we really come up against things we believed in being kind of cracked open. And are you willing to look at that? How does it feel? Sometimes you want to die. Sometimes you reach out and someone reaches back and says, oh yes, I've been there too, and let's go forward. Or I disagree, and you have great, intense conversations. So I really find her ability ultimately to look at and question choices she's made and her life, and try to do this with the people around her, fascinating, hard, stunning, human.
Okay. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing it. So I hope everything goes well.
We're ready for an audience. That's half of, you know, it's not a play without an audience. Please come, everyone.
All right. That's about all the time that we have. Trojan Women will be performed at Perry Theater on November 8th and 9th, and also from the 13th through the 16th.
That wraps up this episode. Thanks to everyone for listening to AU Campus Voice on Spartan Cast.
You can download podcasts of AU Campus Voice from www.aurora.edu/spartancast. Be sure to check out our other programs as well.
I'm Steve Gillow.
And I'm Haley Cummings.
Goodbye, everyone.